better be careful.
Because it did pick up everyone's voice perfectly. And Chief Armand is going to be listening to it because he's the one who asked for the recording. So he'll want to hear who's speaking.
It's better to behave myself.
Maybe I should say who's not.
Did he ask for the backup option also?
Shiva Maharaj, he's proposed that we what he's going to do. And I said I would propose what he's going to do, and then I would propose a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. And I would give everyone the choice of which one we would do. I thought that was inspired. He wants to do with his group to everyone involved. In fact, I asked him how did his session go, and he said it took a lot of work to keep everyone else talking. But he said he didn't answer any questions. So I guess it went a little bit different to some degree. But he wants to get everyone involved, ask everybody to speak about what does Bhagavad Gita mean to them.
Bhagavad Gita, the whole book.
Huh?
The whole book, Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. What it means for us. Yes.
Individually.
Everyone can speak it, and let there be some discussion about it. And he says if that doesn't carry through the whole session, then he wants to go further and read the last, like, four or five main verses of 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. These verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So that's what he's... And my other proposal, I have a particular verse that I really like from the Bhagavad Gita. We could discuss this verse, but again, I'm going to push more for discussion and less of my involvement as much as possible. From the verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, although I did like the verse, I have another verse. And that was a verse from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, second chapter, it's Prayers of the Demigods, which the demigods are praying as follows. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fill the desire of your devotee, and therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vanshakalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet, in order to cross the fierce ocean of Nesha's, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your devotees, you accept this method to help them. Which I like this, Prabhupada talks about in the 10.231. Prabhupada talks about what the acharya leaves behind and how the instructions the acharya leaves behind becomes the boat to carry everyone else across to achieve the same destination. They achieve it. So that was my verse that I had selected. But we can go either way. I would, and I told Maharaj that personally, I would be more inspired. He asked what would inspire me more. I said, I would be more inspired by what inspires you more than what inspires me. So, do you, either of you have choices? I mean, do any of you have choices, preferences of which Bhagavad Gita? To discuss what does Bhagavad Gita mean to you? And then continue by the last verses of the 18th chapter, or to discuss this verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Gita. First, Bhagavad Gita.
Is it a vote?
To my opinion, it's more useful than the lecturer who speaks on.
This is not supposed to be a lecture.
Okay,
but Maharaj, if you are inspired. If you are inspired by this Bhagavatam verse, we get more kick out of it, I'm sure. So why not go for your verse?
I had selected this verse before I heard Shiva Ramaraj's proposal.
Uh-huh.
I, it's not like I'm not inspired by Bhagavad Gita. Don't get me wrong.
this is a wonderful verse. I don't mind that verse. Huh? Personally, I would incline for the verse.
And there are so many layers.
The first is Bhagavad Gita, and second is this verse. What? 10 to 31. Who wants this verse? We're missing some people.
Yeah, they come preparing for the evening language.
Cabaret or
comedy.
But I thought that was Bhagavad Priya
and Radharaja. They'll be here in 5 minutes max.
Ricsi, potete venire io, valami problema, ma non dietro, come un bravo, valami tempo, valami tempo.
I will get you.
Yeah, I have my bag somewhere. It's little sausages. I don't know where they are.
Okay.
If you see them on the table somewhere?
Yeah.
They were on the table. Okay. Then everyone, except, you have something to look on?
Yeah.
Everyone is open to the verse?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Can someone else read it? Maybe? Why not?
The Sanskrit?
Read the Sanskrit and then read the translation.
Svayam samatriya sudustaram vyuman avar navam bhimam adatra sopida avat padam puruha navam atrate nithayayata sadanurak bhavam. Svayam, the birds or just the
translation? You could do the word for which translation?
Svayam,
Svayam,
personally. Samuttirya.
Samuttirya.
Perfectly crossing.
Perfectly crossing.
Sudustaram.
Sudustaram.
Which is very difficult to cross.
Which is very difficult to cross.
Yuman.
Yuman.
O Lord, who appear exactly like the sun, illuminating the darkness of this world of ignorance.
O Lord, who appear exactly like the sun, illuminating the darkness of this world of ignorance.
Hava Arnavam,
Hava Arnavam,
the ocean of missiles,
the ocean of missiles.
Bhimam,
Bhimam,
which is extremely fierce,
which is extremely fierce.
Adapra Sokhvida,
Adapra Sokhvida,
devotees who are incessantly friendly to the fallen souls.
Devotees who are incessantly friendly to the fallen souls.
Havat Pada Amburuha,
Bhavapada Amburuha,
Your lotus feet.
Your lotus feet.
Navam.
Navam.
The boat for crossing.
The boat for crossing.
Atra.
Atra.
In this world.
In this world.
They.
They.
The Vaishnavas.
They. The Vaishnavas.
Nithaya.
Nithaya.
Leaving behind.
Leaving behind.
Yataha.
Yataha.
On to the ultimate destination, Vaikuntha.
On to the ultimate destination, Vaikuntha.
Sat Anurakha.
Sat Anugraha.
Who are always kind and merciful to the devotees.
Who are always kind and merciful to the devotees.
Tavan.
Tavan.
You.
You.
Translation. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotees, and therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vancha Kalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your own other devotees, you accept this method to help them.
You can just commentary.
Perfect. This statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and the merciful supreme personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home back to Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teaching to Rupa Goswami, said, Ramananda Ramanide Kona Bhagyavan Diva Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija Chaitanya Charitamrita Majalila 19-151. One can achieve the seed of Bhakti Lata devotional service by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The duty of the Guru is to find the means according to the time, the circumstances, and the candidate by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from the candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. After wandering throughout the universe, a fortunate person within this material world seeks shelter of such a guru or acharya who trains the devotee in the suitable ways to render service according to the circumstances, to that the supreme personality of Godhead will accept the service. This makes it easier for the candidate to reach the ultimate destination. The acharya's duty, therefore, is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Thus, it is the duty of the acharya to publish books that will help future candidates take up the method of service and become eligible to return home back to Godhead by the mercy of the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, the same path is being prescribed and followed. Thus, the devotees have been advised to refrain from four sinful activities: illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, and to chant 16 rounds a day. These are bona fide instructions. Because in the Western countries, constant chanting is not possible, one shouldn't artificially imitate Haridas Thakur, but should follow this method. Krishna will accept a devotee who strictly follows the regulative principles and the method prescribed in the various books and literature published by the authorities. The acharyas give the suitable method for crossing the ocean of the science by accepting the boat of the lotus feet, and if this method is strictly followed, the followers will ultimately reach the destination by the grace of the Lord. This method is called Acharya Sampradaya. It is therefore said, Sampradaya Vihina Yemantraste Nisphala Mata of Padma Purana. The Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, one must accept the Acharya Sampradaya, otherwise one's endeavor will be futile. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore sings, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sena Vas Janame e Janama, Janame Janame Haya e Avilas. One must worship the lotus feet of the Acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over the sayas will surely be successful.
Anyways, I felt this was really, it's relevant. It's inspired. I don't have to be inspired. It's already inspired by Prabhupada's ecstasies. And it's relevant in the sense that it really helps all of us to focus on how we collectively, in our eagerly attempting to stay in the boat that Srila Prabhupada left behind for us to cross. And his definition of the boat, which is given in his commentary, is leaving behind books, leaving behind instructions, and leaving behind the method that they themselves followed by their own example and have already crossed. So I'm in an attempt to avoid at least starting this discussion by giving my own presentation. I think the first thing I would like to do, since it's a very relevant topic to all of us, is to ask devotees to please express their own realizations and what this verse and commentary means to them. Any volunteers? Oh, you came in too late. Yes, Madhupai?
I can only analyze the English translation, but this is good enough, I think. And there are some words.
Yes, it's interesting. Interesting how Prabhupada translated it also, but go ahead.
Yes, and the word-by-word translation and the complete translation has some interesting discrepancies or differences, but I don't think I can comment on that. But what I would like to comment is on one word in the second sentence. When Acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. So the word I would like to stress is completely. So this is to me, this is a very, very significant word, because it says that the Acharya is a special person also, because he gives an example of complete surrender. So I can only speak for myself, but I'm still struggling to surrender, and I know that the effect is not the same if one is just half surrendered. But this is a very important thing, because when Acharyas completely take shelter, then they get actually supernatural abilities. Mm-hmm. So they are empowered by completely surrendering. They are empowered by the Lord, and actually the Lord puts the seal on the method by which they cross the ocean.
Can anyone seal of approval. Any references which would help us to confirm what you've just stated from Shastra?
Well,
how this complete surrender empowers the Acharya to carry the weight of the entire disciplic succession, as well as the Supreme Lord himself?
I think Bhagavad Gita has as a few points, the Sarvadharma Parichaya verse or Evam Parampara Praptam.
Yes.
They come up. But I'm not such a scholar, so.
Nectar of instruction.
The what now?
The nectar of instruction, the first verse.
Very good. Pachuvega Manasikoda. Uh-huh. Yes, very good. Some other verse? There's one verse Prabhupada used to quote so much. Anyone know? The first Sankirtan. Shyam Bihari? It refers to potencies that one gets, called Shakti. Kali Kalyana Nama, Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Krishna Shakti, Vina Nahi, Taripun Vashana. Anyone know this verse? Kali-Kalera-Dhamma. Fundamental religion system in the age of Kali, the Sankirtan. Unless one has been empowered by the Supreme Lord, it's not possible to spread it. Mm-hmm. Don't know the verse.
Yes. You can talk
about it. Wow, I used to quote that verse so often.
Where is that verse, Maharaj?
Chaitanya Charitamrita, 11.
Chaitanya Charitamrita, you should know this verse. Yes? Papa would quote this verse many, many times.
Just 7?
11.
7-11.
Kali Kalera Dhamma Kayasi. Krishna Nam Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahita Rupalati. In other words, empowerment is it's sort of like the point that I was mentioning yesterday about making decisions and inducing or invoking the Lord's participation in the decision. So that the decision is an inspired decision as opposed to mano-ratena, which was in the verse that Maharani was suggesting that we speak about from the Bhagavatam, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavachi kachinam savayagunas kakya samasate sada harava bhaktasya kato mahakinam Manoritenasati Gavatovihi. Manoritenasati. Manoritena. Manoritena means the chariot of the mind. Alpha translates it as mental speculation. And that verse basically says that those who are driven by mental speculation, who make all their decisions on platform of mental speculation, they have no good qualities. So obviously, the acharya is one who doesn't impose any of the speculations upon his followers. Because he's empowered, that means he has the blessings of the Lord to establish the means by which his followers could cross the ocean of material nescience, I think is how it's pronounced, at least. That's how I've always pronounced it. Nescience. Nescience. Yeah. Although it looks like Nescience. So that can only be achieved according to your commentary for those who have completely taken shelter. Otherwise, if one is not completely taken shelter, they'll still be driven by their own, potentially can still be driven by their own. And Prabhupada makes a very important point in this connection. He was using it for his own example, but it's out of his humility. He gave the example of the difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul. And he says that normally one has to accept the spiritual master from the liberated platform. He said, but he was using the example that empowerment means, and he gave the example of a mechanic. He says, if I don't know anything about being a mechanic, but if I strictly follow someone who knows, who's a mechanic, then I'm as good as a mechanic. And he said, the same way, he said, I may not be liberated, but when I strictly follow the liberated soul, that although I am not liberated, my activities are as good as liberated because I'm strictly following liberated souls. We use that, of course, out of his own humility. But again, that also gives a very good understanding of what it means to be completely under the shelter. It means that one's strictly following. And strictly means, in so many places, when Prabhupada defines strictly, what does it mean? Can anyone tell me what three things are required to be surrendered, to be strictly following? Many verses, Prabhupada adds this even to the verse. For complete surrender is three things.
Mind, body,
words. Body, mind, words. Thank you. Yes. Body, mind, and words. Yeah. Completely surrendered and completely sheltered. And Prabhupada, the reason why he quotes that is he refers to Rupa Goswami's verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anyone know the verse? Maharaj, you know the verse? Begins with Iha. Which means?
Fully surrendered by words and of actions and
we call someone a liberated soul, even in this body, if someone surrenders the body, mind, and
essentially, that's it. He's already liberated, even though he's in the material body. Mm-hmm. He's already liberated, so because his body, his mind, and words are engaged in Krishna service. So that's our understanding of completely sheltered. And many verses. In 7th canto, the verse of Prahlad Maharaj probably talks about how even a person who's born as a dog eater, anyone know this verse? Is considered to be better than a Brahmin? That's another verse. Ahobata Svatpachoto Dariyam. That's 3rd canto, Bhagavatam, this day will be. She says that anyone who's even if he's taken birth, yes, even if one is born in a family dog eater, but if his tongue is decorated with the holy name, he is considered to be have already visited all the places of pilgrimage, to have all the qualities of the Aryan civilization, and what is it? The whole Bhattas anyways, he's fully qualified. Even if he's Svapacho. Is that the verse you're talking about? Yeah. There's another one. 7th canto. 7th canto. I'll look at I want to find it because it's bothering me. It's a wonderful verse this verse that says even if one is born in the family of dog eaters, he is considered to be more advanced, more elevated than a person, a Brahmin, who perfectly follows all the Brahminical principles. because his body, his mind, his world are engaged in Krishna. So it's even if one is born in a family of dogs. Are you looking it up? Or are you just typing something?
I'm looking up.
Did you find it? Seventh canto. If you look up dog eater, I think it will.
I'll find it. Is it with the hyphen or without the hyphen?
Okay, I found it. It's 7, 9, 10. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, all 12, anyone know what the 12 qualifications of a Brahmin are? We'll test.
We can discuss
that afterwards.
We don't know, but we possess it.
The
residents of the spiritual world, they don't know how exalted they are. Okay, well, if a Brahmin has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmin, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmin in a position of false prestige cannot purify even himself. Yeah.
And he puts in the present tense, who is a dog eater?
In present tense. But again, this is another one of Prabhupada's fantastic renderings. I was looking up just recently. I had found that Prabhupada, in one of his commentaries, he had rendered 5 verses of the Bhagavad Gita in his own words. He had rendered them in his own words, not the translation. And when I read it, I was so enlivening the way Prabhupada rendered it, because it was just so it was brilliant. It was poetic. And Prabhupada does that. He doesn't give a little translation, but he's a kavi. And I looked up, and actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta actually referred to Prabhupada as kavi. There's a reference in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. And the characteristic kavi, a poet, is that he can actually take something and render it in a different way, but doesn't lose the meaning, but becomes more poetic and more relishable. So Prabhupada utilizes this poetic skills. And sometimes the scholars, they object to Prabhupada's. They don't like it. They think that Prabhupada is taking too free a license to render the verses, some of the verses, not all the verses, but to render the verses in a way that doesn't strictly follow the literal translation of the word for word of the Bhagavatam. But actually, if I had that connection to the internet, do I have a connection to the internet? Wait a minute. I'm connected to something. I asked if there's an internet connection here. They said no. Because I would like to find, I did research on this, I'd like to share it with you. It's so nice. If I can connect onto my site.
I can bring a stick, mobile stick.
From that? What for you?
My room.
Find out.
For the Mac.
I have my computer. So you can find it. Just as well.
Is this yours? Right here? iPhone?
Yes.
Oh, so you're giving me connection. Poach. Poach. Poach means to steal. Poach. Steal your connection. Okay. Take it. Poach on my iPhone. I don't want to digress, but I'm not really digressing. It really is right on this verse. You know, because this verse is like, this is all Prabhupada, this verse. Prabhupada made the boat. Not only did he use the boat, but he made the boat. Krishna blessed the boat. Krishna took Prabhupada in that boat, and Prabhupada sent the boat back for everyone else who loves his boat, which is his rendering of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the boat. That's the boat, and that's what the whole commentary is about. So this is really right on the verse. That's why I'm so eager to read it, to share it with you. Okay. Get into my site.
Do you have a connection, Maharaj?
Yes, I have a connection.
Okay.
He's a pre-site on connection.
Okay, here it is. I wrote a blog. I won't read his rendering. It's lengthy. If I read it, I may lose you. But I'll read the. Some devotees were trying to figure out why I was so. I wrote a blog, and the blog was, the title of the blog was wonderful, simply wonderful.
Honeyball.
And you know, I put what was simply wonderful, and people were writing in saying they couldn't catch it. What is it? Is it because Prabhupada said this? Because Prabhupada said, what's so wonderful? What can you tell us? What's wonderful about it? They couldn't catch it. Although I alluded to it, but I didn't really spell it out. So I wrote in my next blog. I said, I was informed that there were some questions posted in the comment section of my previous blog. Oh, maybe I did say something in my previous blog. Wait a minute, hold on a second. Wonderful sentence. I put the whole thing. But, can I read it?
Yes,
can I read
please.
Okay, it's just really simply wonderful. I wrote, here's my first blog. Today I was reading this wonderful purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, 6th verse. Within the context of the purport, Srila Prabhupada rendered verses 151 through 155 of Chaitanya Charitamrita in the most beautiful way. These were Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami, which include the often quoted verse, Brahmanda Brahma Te Kona Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadam Pai Bhakti Natavya. These verses were cited in reference to Uddhava. When Vidura met Uddhava, he inquired about Lord Krishna. Upon hearing his inquiries, Uddhava immediately remembered the Lord and became so absorbed in transcendental ecstasy that he forgot all about the external world. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, and this is Prabhupada's words, Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relation to the Lord for engagement in transcendental loving service, and not for any material cause. A living entity can live either on the material plane or in the transcendental abode of the Lord in accordance with his existential condition. The conditional changes of the living entity explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the instructions given to Srila Rupa Goswami by Lord Sri Chaitanya. And then here is Prabhupada's rendering of these verses. It's long. You have to know the verses. If you're familiar with the verses from Manda Brahma Tekan, you know, everyone's familiar with that. Anyone? Not familiar with Pramanda Brahma Tekan the Bhagavad Gita?
This is here.
Huh?
This is here.
It's there.
This is here.
In the purple.
In the purple.
Oh, it's in the purple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it makes it even better. Oh wow, the living entities all over the universes are enjoying the effects of the respective fruit and results of their own work, life after life. Out of all of them, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This is not in the verses itself, not the little Prabhupada's actually just rendering it. It's what he says. He says he gets the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service. And one who is fortunate enough to have received such a seed is advised to sow it in the core of his heart. As one cultivates a seed by pouring water to fructify it, the seed of devotional service sown in the heart of the devotee may be cultured by pouring water in the form of hearing and chanting of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord. The creeper of devotional service, so nourished, gradually grows, and the devotee, acting as a gardener, goes on pouring the water of constant hearing and chanting. The creeper of devotional service gradually grows so high that it passes through the entire material universe and enters into the spiritual sky, growing still higher and higher until it reaches the planet Loka Vrindavan. The devotee gardener is in touch with the abode of the Lord even from the material plane by dint of performing devotional service to the Lord simply by hearing and chanting. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a creeper takes shelter of another stronger tree, similarly, the creeper of devotional service, nourished by the devotee, takes shelter. In other words, as one takes a tree, creeper takes shelter of a stronger tree. So quiet over there. Similarly, the creeper of devotional service, nourished by the devotee, takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and thus becomes fixed. When the creeper is fixed, then the fruit of the creeper comes into existence, and the gardener who nourished it is able to enjoy this fruit of love, and his life becomes successful. So that's Prabhupada's rendering. And then I ended my blog saying, wonderful, simply wonderful. And then people were writing questions, what is it about it? What's so wonderful? Because they thought there was something, you know, that was. But my point was that Prabhupada's rendering of those verses, which is different than the actual literal translation of the verses, was so wonderful. And then I wrote in the next blog,
Where is it?
What was it that I found so wonderful in Srila Prabhupada's rendition of the five verses Lord Chaitanya spoke to Srila Rupa Goswami? Their answer is as follows. The answer is as follows. One of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava is that he is poetic. Srila Prabhupada told us that when he submitted his first speech in English to the harmonist, along with the English poem he had written as a Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada was immediately recognized by his godbrothers as a competent writer in English, and many of them even began calling him Kavi, or learned poet, which is godbrothers. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, 1st chapter 195-196, in his conversation with Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Roy praises the wonderful poetic description written by Rupa Goswami as follows. Quote, "What is the use of a bowman's arrow or a poet's poetry if they penetrate the heart but do not cause the head to spin? Without your mercy, such poetic expressions would be impossible for an ordinary living being to write. Simply put, I was overwhelmed by Srila Prabhupada's poetry-like rendition of the following five verses." He had translated differently in future Charitamrita. And then I gave those first. So, Prabhupada does that in so many places. He renders it. And this verse that we're reading today is one such poetic rendition. If you look at the word for word and you look at how Prabhupada rendered it, there's a lot of additional words. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be analyzing the verse and actually even trying to understand why did Prabhupada render things in that way. So that we can, I don't need the connection anymore. We'll go back to the verse. Would anybody like to make some comment? Or extract something else from this verse that...
that we were reading?
Yes, the verse.
Oh.
The verse, because I justified reading of what I just read because I really felt it was really connected to the verse itself, which really Prabhupada being the acharya, the boat he constructed and which was blessed by Krishna, was not only the books. His books, of course, are the basis. His books are the basis. Preaching is the essence. Utility is the principle. Purity is the force. And he not only gave us the boat in the form of his books, which he alludes to in his own commentary, that Rupa Goswami left Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as a boat, but he gave us the institution, which was like the boat, with so many instructions as well for all of his followers to follow, so that would enable them to stay within the boat. Prabhupada also, he has a very interesting analogy about boat, and I'm going to stop talking here because I'm going to try to get more people to talk. Prabhupada gives an analogy about a boat. He says that sometimes it is seen that a devotee in his effort to cross the ocean, he has to undergo so many disturbances crossing the ocean. He said, just like crossing the ocean, there'll be so many disturbances. And it almost may appear that the devotee is undergoing some severe karmic reactions in his efforts to cross the ocean. And Prabhupada gave the example. He said, when one has crossed the ocean of the boat, he says the boat may be influenced by the waves. He said, but it's not that one is in the ocean. He said, one is in the boat. And therefore, he says, although one is in the boat, he may be influenced by the waves as long as he stays in the boat. He'll get across the other side. So in the same way, he says that a devotee, he's not in the ocean of material nature, but he's influenced by the modes of material nature. Just as a person who's in the boat is influenced by the waves. But there's a difference between being in the waves and being in a boat influenced by the waves. And he uses that analogy. Even more important, why we have to stay in the boat and not jump ship and find ourselves in the waves without a boat to carry us across. Any other examples about boats one can think of? There's other examples from the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, right in the beginning.
What's that?
Right in the beginning. In
we have accepted you?
Yeah, as captain of the ship.
That's right. Others? Examples?
Samashitaya Padapadavikram. That verse.
For
those who accept Krishna, then for them the material existence, the ocean of material existence, shrinks to be the size of coughs.
Water and water.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good verse. Father?
There's another verse, Tattena Kampamsa, it also talks about if someone understands his position and his previous karma that he's suffering because of that, that he can be patiently waiting until he gets rid of this, knowing that he will be inheritance of
what is given to me. Anyone else? Comments about this verse? It's supposed to be relevant to everybody, not just to me. Comments? Questions? No, no questions. Oh, there. Yes.
Well, I always have comments on anything and everything.
Okay.
Actually, these are just some thoughts about the verse. In the beginning, it is said that what you're like, kalpaviksha, like a desire fulfilling tree, and of a devotee. So fulfills the desires of the devotees. And then I became really happy. Wow, that's great. He will fulfill maybe my desires if I'm a devotee. And then we read the next sentence, and then it is said, well,
who is a devotee?
The first word is if an acharya. And then it continues, and then oh my, again it comes. And again, the completely, the word completely is again there. So,
there's more to this. But go ahead.
I was thinking about Prabhupada in regards to this, because when we read Prabhupada's Lilamrita, then we can see that Prabhupada had such a strong desire to fulfill his spiritual master's instructions. And he was waiting 40 years to be able to achieve something. Well, he achieved quite a lot of things before that, but then it was really ripe, and the fruits were coming. Not before that. It is not written here when will that desire be fulfilled. So the time factor is not written here. So it's like the devotee could have a desire, and then sometime later, when Krishna wants, it will be fulfilled if the time is right. Otherwise, we could have the desire. We can live happily and die happily with that.
Yes, but by the mere fact that the devotee has firm faith that the desire will be fulfilled, he's ready to wait 10 million births.
Yeah.
Because he has such firm faith in the words of the Lord that, I mean, the example I often think of is Mukunda. You know, he asked, he said, when will my desire be fulfilled? When will I see Lord Chaitanya again? And what? It's Chaitanya Bhagavan.
Yeah. 10 million years.
Huh? 10 million births.
10 million births. Yeah.
He said that rascal. 10 million births. Will see me again.
Yes. And he was happy.
Because he had such firm faith, that, and all he heard was, "I will see. He will see again." But so for him, he will see again. Was, and the Lord said it, was his ecstasy. He was ready to wait 10 million births, but of course the Lord reduced it to a few moments because his faith was so strong in the Lord's words.
That was the water in the calf's hoof.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, the Lord, not only it was a drop in the eyedropper. But yeah, I mean, because that's why patience is one of the most important qualities Rupa Goswami gives for advancing in devotional service. The devotee has to be patient. He's patient, but he's always faithful that he will get Krishna's mercy, whether it's now, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, 100 births from now. He's always. But his faith is not in himself. His faith is in the manifestation of mercy which is accessible to him. In other words, faith in Srila Prabhupada, faith in one's spiritual master, faith in Lord Chaitanya, how Lord Chaitanya is the uplifter of the most fallen, faith in the holy name, you know. And here we get to that quality of faith again, you know, because he has complete faith. The devotee never thinks that I'm too fallen for Lord Chaitanya to lift me. You know. If he came to lift the most fallen, then I fit in his room. And to think that I'm more fallen is just self-indulgent. I'm not the prophet, even said you're the most nothing.
The most insignificant.
So, but your point, hearing these things, you know, when the desire will be fulfilled, and who gets the desire fulfilled, you have to be very conscious of the fact that the Acharya's desire is to bring us across. We're getting help. And that's why a devotee should never feel, he feels helpless, but never feels hopeless. Because without help, what could we possibly achieve? But we're so fortunate that we have in our lives the manifestation of Vaishnavas who actually are so selfless that they're thinking of upliftment. And what to speak of, so self. I mean, when Prabhupada wrote his prayer to Jaladutta, he was praying, you know, let them hear your message. I have no qualifications, but only I pray that you deliver them. I mean, Prabhupada was actually, you know, putting in a word for everyone. too. So, you know, that's what this whole verse is about. It shouldn't be discouraging in the sense that, well, only those who are completely taken shelter, you know, get to cross. But I get help. I'm getting help. The Prabhupada even said once, what was it? He said to one devotee, he said, one devotee felt, you know, how's it possible to go to spiritual world? Prabhupada said, don't worry, I have the key to the back door.
I didn't get that.
You didn't hear that? No. One devotee said, how is it ever possible I go back to the spiritual world? And Prabhupada said, don't worry, I have the key to the back door. I mean,
I just started thinking maybe that proves your point that Prabhupada puts the Vanchakapataru to the translation, which is not really in the verse.
That's right.
It doesn't really mention the Lord as a desire tree. It just mentioned the Lord as a sun. It shows that the desire somehow appears. The devotee's desire appears in the translation, but not in the real verse.
Mm-hmm.
Is it so? Because yes. I was really surprised why Prabhupada puts it, and even in Sanskrit. But there's no reference to it in the verse itself.
Why? Yes. Well. Why does he put it?
I think you've already explained why.
That's the question.
I think he's directly inspired by the author.
Prabhupada. Many times he's directly inspired. But a lot of times he's inspired by commentaries of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur or Sanatana Goswami. I mean, we can look at Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Maybe there's something. I have his commentary right in front of me to the 10th canto. What are you talking
about? Watching all the same direction.
Oh, okay. I get nervous when I get nervous. It's in my database.
It's your database?
I have a database. Yes, somebody gave it to me. But I can't give it to anybody because I don't have the serial number. Yeah, I tried to give it to Shiva Maharaj. I couldn't give it to him. Someone put it in the computer. It's got the whole new folio. It's called Rocket's Folio. And it's got like hundreds of other books in there besides.
Is it available?
Commentaries of the Acharya, sir.
Is it available?
No.
So you cannot buy it?
From this one devotee. There's a Russian devotee. From Moscow, but he's living in South America right now.
He does not have an email address or a phone number.
He does have an email address. As a matter of fact, my computer wasn't working and the database wasn't working one day and I flipped out. Because I use this every day practically. And I wrote to find out how to get in touch with the devotee and they sent me his email address because I couldn't even reinstall it without getting the serial number. But then I fixed it somehow. And then I didn't need the serial number, so I never got the serial number. But this is Sarata Darshini. Sarata Darshini, it's available, public. It's published. And I have the Sarata Darshini number. And we can look to see if there's something in there that inspired Prabhupada to put in Vanchakalpa Taru. I'll read the commentary. This commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Usually Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, especially in Sarata Darshini, he takes words and he translates the word, expands the meaning of specific words in the verse. So the first word is Svayam. he translates Swayam as personal, indicates that the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees. Did you hear that? No trouble. You're going to have to think about stop the world, I want to get off. Personally, Swayam personally indicates that the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees.
One more time.
No trouble?
At all.
It just seems that way. I mean, it just seems, you know, we have to understand that what seems like trouble for us is just mitigating whatever reactions we have that are supposed to come. The Lord is actually mitigating it, that we're experiencing it, because the future is always bright.
Future always bright.
Future is always bright. Because, yes, it's always bright.
It
only seems right now, it's like trouble. It only seems that way. But all it is it's actually eradicating all whatever residual effects from sinful reactions that are there, as long as we stay on the boat and don't jump off. That whatever trouble that we're undergoing now is just mitigating and eradicating, and therefore a devotee is able to always look, because of his faith, look and see that the future is very bright, because there won't be any reactions left after all these reactions I'm going through right now. And what to speak of, we deserve worse. So, no trouble at all. Just stay in the boat.
Okay? I'm holding. I'm seasick, but I'm okay.
Well, I heard you were swimming today. Preparation for jumping into the ocean.
He went swimming without a spiritual master.
Yes. Let's see tomorrow.
So that's Swayam personally indicates the material. I'll read it one more time. Indicates the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees. Juman. The Lord is addressed as Juman, the Son. This infers that those within whom the Son of Krishna does not remain in the terrible material ocean. This infers that those within whom the Son of Krishna does not remain. I am trying to understand the sentence. Wait a minute. Let me read it first. This infers that those within whom the Son of Krishna does not remain in the terrible. Oh, within whom the Son of Krishna does not remain in the terrible material ocean. It doesn't make sense.
My life like this.
That doesn't make sense. Anyways, I'll read it. This infers that those within whom the Son of Krishna, does not remain in the terrible material ocean of insurmountable darkness, within whom there is the Son of Krishna, it seems to me, that's what he's saying. Within whom exists the Son of Krishna.
Maybe a typing error.
Yeah, it could be a typo. Quote, when you shine on the sunrise mountain of Prema Bhakti, all darkness automatically disappears. Then easily one can cross the ocean into your missions. This is no reference to Kalpataru. But there is, wait a minute. Navam Atra Tejidhaya. Leaving the boat on the bank means that the devotee established bhakti movements and then crossed the ocean of material existence. By this act, others are able to cross over the ocean of repeated birth and death. Though the material influence gets completely destroyed, the devotees remain here. This is only an expression of humility in the devotees. For them, the material world is compared to the water in the calf's hoofprint, because the water in the calf's hoofprint is actually purifying and praiseworthy. In the same way, the devotee's impression that he is caught in samsara purifies the devotee of the disease of false identification and is therefore praiseworthy. Should I read that one?
Yeah,
for the animal material world is compared to the water in the calf's hoofprint, because the water in the calf's hoofprint is actually purifying and praiseworthy. In the same way, the devotee's impression that he is caught in some sorrow purifies the devotee of the disease of false identification and is therefore praiseworthy. So, it's actually an expression of humility. For us, of course, it's reality. Sananugraha Bhavan, here, how are the devotees able to cross the ocean of birth and death? Because you, Sri Krishna, Bhavan, are merciful, Anugraha, to the devotees, Sat, and not to others. So, no reference to Kalpatiya. Comes to Kalpatiya. Krishna, something about the fact that. But this must be just Prabhupada's.
Insert it.
Yeah. Like he does in so many places. Insert it. But why do we analyze it? What does it mean? In reference to this verse, I think it's very important analysis. To be like a wish fulfilling desire tree. Can anybody expand on that? What is a wish? What is a desire tree? I mean, what is a? Why is Krishna known as a wish fulfilling desire tree? I know you'll say because he fulfills all desires. But.
I've heard that Krishna is forced to fulfill the pure devotee's desires. So he just cannot withhold fulfilling the desires of the pure devotees.
Well, he's forced, but by love for his devotees. It's not like a resentful force, like. When you use the word force, it almost sounds like. Because Prabhupada makes it very clear in the one commentary in the 10th canto, where he said that Prabhupada is commenting on how Krishna is under the control of his devotees. And he said that, we should understand that Krishna is not under the control of his devotee, but he's under the control of his devotee's love. Not under the control of the devotee, but he makes the point, it's the love. And because love is a very dynamic, in its true sense, love is totally selfless. So therefore Krishna agrees to be bound by his devotee's love. But he always has a choice. He's never forced in a sense, in the true sense, that he has no choice. But he, by his own choice, he likes being controlled by the love of his devotees, by his own choice. So in the sense that Krishna, by his own choice, he likes to protect his devotee. And protecting the devotee means protecting the words of his devotees also. He likes, in fact, is that well-known example that Prabhupada uses, Kauntiya Patijani Hinama Bhakti Pranashiti, when Krishna says to Arjuna, you declare it, Arjuna, that my devotee is always there. Because if I say it, people might not listen to me. Because I don't always uphold my own, even my own words. But one thing, but one thing I always do is I always protect the words of my devotee. So they'll have to, if you say it, they'll have to accept it. So no? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes? Anyway. So what does it mean that Krishna is like a desire tree in connection to this verse? Can we elaborate on these things? Yes.
I was thinking that ultimately everybody's looking for Krishna. Everybody wants a the things that they're looking for in this material world are only really ultimately going to be fulfilled when they have a connection with Krishna, a personal connection, an exchange of love with Krishna. So in that way, Krishna is the... he can fulfill everyone's desires when he gives himself to them. It's when he finally... when we convince him that we are very serious about that relationship, then that desire is fulfilled. So this way Krishna is the ultimate kind of reach to it.
Yes, you would like to add something?
Yeah, in the Bhagavad Gita we have read and we have heard it many times in classes that it's like we are not the doers, we just have a desire, and that desire is understood by the super soul and according to our karma, and according to the desire then Krishna moves the material nature, the three modes of material nature, in a way that that desire is fulfilled or it is fulfilled later when the karma is there so that we can have the result of that desire.
Okay,
so ultimately Krishna understands the desires of everyone, not just the devotees, and he allows or he rejects to fulfill that desire.
Yes. But what is the difference between, and this verse really emphasizes, is the difference between those who are devotees and those who are not devotees. What is the difference in fulfilling of the devotees' desires as opposed to non-devotees' desires? There's a difference, complete difference in the Lord's attitude towards their fulfillment. Could someone...
I think the Lord takes pleasure in fulfilling the desires of the devotee. It's a reciprocation. It's ecstatic for the Lord to fulfill the desire of such devotee and Prabhupada.
Yes, and actually, in fact, in the verse Tesham, what is the verse? Tesham nitya biyuktanam yoga kshema bahamya ananyas chintaye tamam yejana payubhashante tesham nitya biyuktanam yoga. Baladeva Vijayabhushan in his commentary, no, not Baladeva Vijayabhushan, Vishwanathamurti Thakur in his commentary makes a wonderful point that Krishna actually relishes maintaining his devotees just as a husband relishes maintaining or husband relishes carrying his wife or something like that. I think that's what he uses example. In other words, he says specifically that Krishna never considers his devotee's maintenance as his own personal burden. He relishes doing it. This derives pleasure. So, yes, it takes pleasure. What else?
What came into my mind that the verse says that you are always ready to fulfill the desire. It doesn't say that he will fulfill the desire of the devotee. He says that he's ready to fulfill. In the same way, the kalpa vriksha in the spiritual sky, they are there and ready to fulfill the desires of the devotees. But I can't recall last time when the cowherd boys or the gopis went to a kalpa vriksha and asked something. And a lecture came into my mind from my spiritual master, and he's speaking about another lecture given by Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna is ready to fulfill everyone's desires, and they continue, but the gopis in Vrindavan, they never ask anything from him. So maybe that's it.
I can explain this also according to Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's commentaries of the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam, the story of Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. I will explain. This is a beautiful explanation. But I still wanted to get to the point about what is the difference between Krishna's fulfilling the desires of his devotees and others. Can anyone tell me?
Isn't that that he accepts the method? They want to bring the conditioned soul. So if they create a method and they have a real desire to that this method works, because their goal is so pure that they want to bring this conditioned soul. Then it is a new method. Then Krishna accepts it.
Yes, he's pure devotees. Those who are fully under the shelter. But I'm talking about even those who aren't his pure devotees. Because that's more, that may be more relatable for everyone here. Well, can someone tell me what is the difference between when Krishna fulfills the desires of his devotees, who may not be so pure in their desires, and the non-devotees?
For non-devotees, he fulfills their desires by his energies, and for devotees, he personally fulfills the desires.
Uh-huh. Okay. And something more? Anything else? Little Sukha?
If a non-devotee, Krishna fulfills their desire according their karma, and devotees according what is very beneficial for him
Or as Bhagavatam states, he fulfills the desires in such a way that the devotee will never come back and ask for it again. So there's a difference. There's a clear difference between the fulfillment of the desires of the devotee and the non-devotee. Because the non-devotee, he's completely passive. He's completely passive. He's just witness. That's giving sanction. Completely passive. But the devotee is not so passive. He's always thinking of the ultimate interest of the devotee. So someone may say, well, why didn't Krishna fulfill my desires? And I guess, of course, then there's the when will it happen, or how long will it take, how long do I have to pray to Krishna for this? when's he going to... Man proposes, God disposes, but that according to Krishna's will is supreme. He decides when, how long. So, anything else? Anybody else can think of difference between the fulfillment?
I wanted to say the same thing as Radha Raja.
Same thing as what?
Radha Raja Prabhu.
Which was?
That Krishna personally gives the desire for devotees and indirectly for non-devotees.
Even though the devotee may not... What was it? Was something about even though the devotee may not ask for it?
Yeah,
it's almost like you were saying, like the devotee never goes to the desire tree and asks, can I? But that's what I was going to give that example of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives in the Bhagavatam, in the story of Maharajambari. Is that the Can I give that now, or you were going to ask something?
I would like to ask something.
Okay.
Does it work for small desires but you know, totally do not have any connection with spiritual life.
Does Krishna fulfill those?
Yeah. I have some experience, I'm just curious.
Yeah, Krishna can fulfill the small desires that have no connection, but yeah, it won't satisfy us. We may think we're temporarily satisfied by it.
I'm just asking because I always had a desire to ride on a Harley Davidson.
What?
Ride on a Harley Davidson.
Harley Davidson.
Ride on a Harley Davidson.
And I moved to Krishna Valley, and there wasn't too much of them. But once there was a band who came to visit Krishna Valley. These guys, you know, the arms are more wider than my legs.
Like a motorcycle gang.
Yeah.
Hells Angels type. Huh? Hells Angels type people.
Hells Angels type.
And my authority asked me to take them pictures when they arrive, and after that in the temple. And that time the office was in the village. And I made the pictures, and I realized they will go up with motorcycle. And I'm by foot, so I was not able to take pictures of them. So I asked one of them, "Can I just go with you?" And he was like this big.
He said, "Yes."
And I was sitting behind him, and I was taking pictures, and it came into my mind. I had that strong desire earlier. And I was thinking, oh, Krishna fulfilled my desire. And I was quite embraced that Krishna had to deal with this stupid thing for me.
You want to say something? Go ahead.
I just want to comment. Why did he fulfill your desire? To increase your faith. So this whole event is no longer material, it's spiritual. Does it increase your faith? Is that right? I had another experience, may I? About it. And I just want to illustrate that Krishna sometimes fulfills spiritual desires like this. That was many years ago, like I think 10 years ago. I was just in the first steps, taking the first steps. And I was driving to the farm very early. I left home at 3 a.m. or something, and it was I was meditating on how nice it would be if I could meet a devotee, have the association of a devotee before I have to arrive to Krishna Valley. And on the way, I was driving already off the highway, and there was a 24/7 shop, and I just stopped. I thought, why not buy some apples for the cows? I used to do that in those days, and I just stopped at this shop, and I went in, and there was, I wasn't even conscious of it, but there was some familiarly sounding music, okay, and that was in Lele, the roundabout, I'm sure you know. Yes, and I just, I bought the apples, and I just thought, what an interesting necklace this boy has. And it just turned out he was reading Bhagavatam and having kirtans there. And we were just exchanging a few niceties, and then just went on. Now, after I've driven off, I realized, this was the fulfillment of my desire. Just like that.
Yeah. I mean, some experiences like that actually are very inspirational.
Yes. I'm still inspired.
Still inspired.
Then also, they can serve as a caution, word of caution. We have to be careful what we ask Krishna.
Caution.
Caution. Caution. Yeah, we should be careful what we ask Krishna.
So is it okay if I had desires previously and now I go to the deities and say I'm okay without them?
but now
there's a wonderful, the whole story of Dhruva Maharaj, whole story of Guru Maharaj is exactly that point. Because when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj was motivated by a few major things. One of them is he was motivated by resentment towards his stepmother, resentment towards his stepbrother, and even towards his father. Towards his father, he was thinking he wanted the kingdom even better than his father's. Right? Even better than his grandfather's. Even better than his grandma. And he had these feelings, and he was motivated by these feelings of resentment. And that's what motivated him to go to the forest and to get the association of the Lord. And the Bhagavatam explains, of course, how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, but Prabhupada integrated it into his commentary as well, that when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj, the Lord said to Dhruva, he said, the Dhruva recognized him, was so grateful seeing him. And what the Lord told to Dhruva was, you will get a kingdom better than your great-grandfather's. I'll give you a kingdom. And he said, as far as your mother is concerned, your brother is concerned, he'll be killed in the forest in the future. And your mother will go in looking for him, and she'll be devoured by a forest fire. And then, after that, the Lord left. The Lord left. And, you know, and Dhruva, when he first came, he said to the Lord in his prayers, he said, I only want your association of your devotees, now that I see you. And then, but the Lord, after he left, he didn't talk anything about that. He realized the Lord only talked about my previous desires. All those desires that I had before. But he didn't mention anything about he's going to think that I'm deceitful. That I was lying to him, that I want devotees' association. He just thought of my previous desires and then left. And he was just thrown into that. And there's six verses, which is Dhruva's lamentation. I mean, he was disgusted with himself. He was lamenting with himself. Everything he felt towards himself. And of course, that lamentation was purified. The Lord, he realized the Lord fulfilled my desire, but actually, and then he said, I come here looking for a piece of broken glass, I found the most valuable jewel, you know. But he realized after the Lord left that the Lord, when he spoke, the Lord spoke to him, didn't talk anything about the current. Only just referred to the past. And he was just totally thrown into lamentation. Of course, the Lord instructed him also about the kingdom. He said how he will rule the kingdom for, I think, 36,000 years. And then after that, he'll go to his own planet, Yuvaloka, and how Yuvaloka is superior and everything. He explained all that to him. But he was still, and he was also, the Lord told him that by performance of your duties, as carrying out your duties as a king, he said that you'll never be touched by the influence of material nature. You'll always be above, beyond material nature. He did say that. But anyways, I just thought of that when you said that. That's an example in the Bhagavatam of how the Lord fulfilled his desires, but he wasn't current. He was.
He wasn't up to date.
Yeah. He was going back to say, okay, this is what he bothered me with before.
But that was also instruction, wasn't it?
Huh?
That was also instruction, wasn't it?
That was what?
Instruction.
That was instruction. Yes? Instruction for us.
And for us, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you have the question.
And you wanted to continue with Ambarish
Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj. Did you want to say anything else? Yeah. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry, I got so caught up in that.
Unfortunately, yes.
I got so caught up in the example because it just popped in my mind. That example of Guru Maharaj. They're wonderful verses. You might want to read them. I can't remember the chapter. Text 33, fourth canto, 33 to 37, 38. I think when Dhruva returns home. Yeah, okay. Now, Tagore doesn't ask, but still the Lord fulfills his desire. And that's exemplified in the story of Maharaj Ambarish. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur creates a dialogue between Ambarish, no, Durvasa Muni and the Lord, based on the verses when Durvasa Muni comes before, after he goes to Brahma, then he goes to Lord Shiva, then he goes to Lord Vishnu. And he comes to Lord Vishnu and asks Lord Vishnu, can you please, you know, somebody's following me. Can you deal with it? And then the Lord says to him, he says, I'm not under control. He said, I'm completely under the control of my devotee. I'm not independent. He says, what to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotees. He says, I depend on them. And then in the next verse he says, the devotee is always in my heart and I am always in the heart of my devotees. The devotee is always in me and I'm always in them. So that was the Lord's answer to Durvasa Muni. And I can't remember the Sanskrit terminology, but he creates a dialogue based on these verses which expands on this exchange between the Lord and Durvasa Muni. And the dialogue is that Durvasa Muni says to the Lord, he says, I've come to take shelter of you. And he said, certainly you must see that I'm suffering. And you're the Supreme Lord. And please, you know, if I can't go to you, who can I go to? And the Lord said, "He says, I'm sorry. I can't do anything for you." Which essentially is what he's saying is, I'm not independent. I'm under the control of my devotee. And then Durvasa Muni says, "But how is it that you are the Lord and somebody's coming to you for shelter? And don't you feel?" Don't you have any feelings for my suffering? And the Lord says, no. Durvasa Muni is trying to understand, how is it you have no feeling for my suffering? And he says, because my devotee is in my heart. He says, the devotee, and I'm in the heart of the devotee. This is the devotee. He takes me into his heart and he serves me so nicely in his heart that I want to give something to my devotee. So I keep on telling my devotee, can I give you something? And my devotee always says, no, I don't want anything. So, and he said, and then he says, but I ask my devotee again, please let me give you this. But my devotee says, all I want is to simply to serve you. I don't want anything. He said that, but therefore, but even though my devotee doesn't ask for something from me, he doesn't want anything from me. It's my nature. I want to give him something, but what can I give him that will be he'll appreciate? He doesn't want anything from me. So he says, therefore, I have to go into my most, into my valuable treasure house, and to get the most precious item for him to give him. And that most precious item I can give him is my heart. I gave my heart to Maharaj Ambari, and you're asking me to have a heart. If you want my heart, you got to go to Maharaj Ambari. He's got it. And that's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's, like, I just kind of like, that's his dialogue that in helping us to understand how the Lord, although the devotee doesn't ask for it, the Lord still wants to give something. So he has to give something to his devotee that the devotee would really relish. So it's not necessarily that he's giving us, you know, an inheritance. But that too may be there. But the point that Vishwanath Chakravarti makes in Tesha Nijit Uyukhanam Nulu Chaitanyam, that the Lord gives whatever the devotee needs to serve him, to come to him. So he gives whatever the devotee needs, but he also gives the most valuable gift he has in his treasure house. He gives himself, even though the devotee will never ask for it. And so in many ways the Lord gives to his devotees, although the devotees will never ask for it. And if you look at the examples in the Bhagavatam with the prayers of the different pure devotees, they're always just asking for, you know, let me take birth among the devotees again and again and again. In fact, I was just reading, what is it? Yeah, Lord Brahma's prayer. He was saying that, he said that, actually, it was Lord Brahma's prayer in relationship to a conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Keshava Bharati. And Keshava Bharati had asked Lord Chaitanya, no, Lord Chaitanya asked Keshava Bharati, he said, please tell me, what is superior? Impersonal liberation or devotional service? And he asked it because, you know, Keshava Bharati was sort of impersonal sampradaya. So Keshava Bharati said that all devotional service is superior. And Lord Chaitanya said, please explain to me, why do you say that? And then Keshava Bharati explained, he says, the reason I can understand it superior is because I see so many examples of great exalted saintly persons, whenever they're given the opportunity for anything other than devotional service, they always immediately refuse it and they go directly for devotional service. And he used the example just like Lord Brahma, when the Lord offered to Lord Brahma a benediction, Lord Brahma said to the Lord, he said, what was it? Let me take birth. Wherever I take birth, whether in this life or in some future life, my only prayer is that someday I'll be counted as your devotee. And then he says, there's a very well-known verse. I can't remember the Sanskrit verse. And he says, in some future birth, or just please engage me in your devotional service. So the devotee immediately only wants devotional service. It's all he wants. He does, although the Lord asks the devotee for something, the devotee will never ask for anything except the opportunity to serve him. So in this example of this conversation with Durvasa Muni, it's specifically because Maharaj Ambarish, when Durvasa Muni cursed him, Maharaj Ambarish didn't ask the Lord for protection. And Prabhupada explains, he just naturally remembered the Lord. He just naturally remembered the Lord, but he didn't even ask the Lord to be protected. And therefore the Lord, because of his natural remembrance, just complete absorption in thoughts of the Lord, as he was accustomed, because his mind, his words, his body, everything were fully engaged, his spontaneous reaction to the presence of, well, who was it? What was the name of the demon? Virabhadra? Was it? That Durvasa invoked when he pulled out his hair? Anyways, it was just to remember the Lord. So although Maharaj Ambarish didn't ask for protection, he just remembered. And therefore the Lord gave him protection. So the Lord will give, even though the devotee doesn't ask for it. Of course the Lord will also give even if the devotee asks for it. I mean, there are examples like Karma Muni. He wanted a wife of like disposition. But there is more to it than that. There's many. Hello. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Karma Muni was a hope. another long explanation. But the Lord is definitely will give without asking. Because he knows our hearts. And therefore, all the more important that we keep our heart pure. Does that answer your question? We're supposed to end at 6 o'clock.
No, quarter to.
Of course, we're supposed to end at quarter to 6. We're already over.
It's okay.
I just asked.
Oh,
okay. Because of the skit. Does anybody have anything you want to add to this verse? Because desires, I mean, this is you were known as a desire tree. Krishna fulfills the desires in her of his pure devotees. And however, however the devotee wants to serve him, Krishna will accept it. But that's actually Krishna's quality. I mean, that's the beauty of the spiritual world. Is that however, whatever way wants to serve Krishna, Krishna is ready to completely give himself completely to whatever way we want to serve. Some would say, well, we're so limited, it's only we can only serve him as a servant or a friend or a parent or a lover. Those are the only choices. But it's something else. So boring. Finish it. We finish it. So we finish it, I guess, too. Okay.
So,
no, don't apologize. You've pushed everything in the right direction. Any last comments? Anything? Some.
Thank you.
You're about the verse.
Actually, I just spent 2 hours on the first sentence.
Yeah. It is a wonderful verse. I really love this verse.
Is this verse connected to somehow to this other verse that Dharmam to Sakshat Bhagavat Kamitam?
The principles of religion?
Yeah. So in this verse,
it seems to me that not only the Lord can give the religious principles, but the pure devotees also.
Yes. Yes, it is a wonderful verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Where Lord Chaitanya declares that only my devotee establishes the true principles of religion. And he gave the example of Madhavendra Puri. I can't remember the Bengali. Is it? I used to know the verse, but it's gone. When Lord Chaitanya met a Brahmin, and Brahmin invited him, Lord Chaitanya, to his home to feed him. You know the reference you're speaking about? Ordinarily, he was from some community which sannyasis are not supposed to eat food from. Mm-hmm. But the Brahmin, he noticed that the Brahmin was really like manifesting symptoms of intense devotion. And he asked him, I said, tell me, you look like you've associated with Madhavendra Puri. And he said, yes. He came to my home once, he accepted me as a disciple, and he accepted food from my hands, from my home. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes. He said, it is the Bodhi which establishes the two principles of religion. I follow their example. Madhavendra Puri establishes the two principles of religion. Yes, that's also a reference to the Mahajans, isn't it?
Yes.
Well. Okay.
Thank you.
And watch